In a world of podcasts, you are listening to... You're listening to Weird Christian Twitter, the podcast, with your hosts, Amy, Andrew, and Finchface.
I think we're 5 years away from being extinct.
Oh, Earth is ghetto. Oh, Earth is ghetto. Oh, Earth is ghetto. I wanna leave.
The very most 10 being extinct.
Well, speaking of sex, hey guys. I totally caught you guys. That was awesome. The reaction. Oh, we need to start releasing video.
This is what I didn't record either. I didn't set up to record.
No, I mean, like, we're here. We're gonna have Sheila. On with us, the author of The Great Sex Rescue. So,
yep.
Sex is on the brain.
Yeah.
What you got on your mind?
I've had some vodka, so I'm good. You can't talk about sex.
Every episode, we have vodka present. We are such good
evangelists. Or Prosecco.
Yeah.
Or Prosecco.
You need to get sponsored, Amy.
Yeah, I do, don't I? Yeah,
I like, dude, Tito's, or Texas
Tito's,
vodka.
Tito's, Hammond vodka, yeah.
Oh, we can't get that over here, I don't know
what. Hey, you can't Tito, get if you're out there, if you're listening,
shout out.
No, Smirnoff, please, Smirnoff, something that's international. I can't get Tito's, so I'm going to have to get something that can, on the UK.
We'll have to smuggle some
Tito's. I mean, vodka's vodka, though. Do we really, like... plain vodka, do we really taste different?
No, I literally drink the shop own brand, whatever's cheapest. I literally went to the women and said, what's on offer? I'll have that one.
We should tag Smirnoff in the next release of this episode.
Yeah, shout out Smirnoff. Hey, Smirnoff, Tito's, Grey Goose, Pitiful. We're wide open for your...
Yeah, exactly. We could be your entrance point into the evangelical
Christian
secular.
We are on the up and up.
Contemporary Christian vodka.
Yeah, Christian vodka.
It's the next... Oh, gosh. Al Mohler would love it, and I would be all here for it. And we would... We are on the up and up, guys. Oh, hey.
Sheila.
Speaking of this episode, we were just... Sheila, so glad you were with us. Thank you for joining.
Yeah, awesome. I'm glad to be here.
So good morning. And we were just kind of recording a just stupid intro that we always do before you showed up, and you caught us bragging on ourselves, which is not really a brag, because this is the most ridiculous podcast.
We're seeing if we can get sponsored by vodka for podcasts, so we can be... You are trying to sell coffee sex to the evangelical world. We're trying to sell alcohol to the evangelical world. I reckon we can do this.
We should put it in terms that she's familiar with. We're lying about our size.
Oh my god! This is why I drank vodka.
This is Sheila. More vodka, please. Yeah.
So who is everybody? I know who Amy is because she's kind of obvious.
Everyone knows and loves Amy.
The only Brit. It's just clear.
Yeah, it's because I'm British, definitely.
So go on, boys. The boys.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I'm Andrew. I'm Florida Man on Twitter.
Okay.
Yes, but Andrew, it's really nice to meet you.
And I'm Jay, and I'm at Jay Finchface.
Okay, cool.
I know y'all already.
I know that, Sheila, we follow each other, but I understand you don't really know who we are. You only know Amy, and that's okay, because that's why we have Amy here. She's the face of the podcast. She's the figurehead. She's the administrator.
The queen.
I'm the authority over. That's what it is. Everyone needs a head, and that's me.
Yep. And true story, our resident theologian, too. That is, and that's very true.
And scholar.
Yeah, she's incredible. Right.
So. I'll take it.
We're so thankful for you to come on and be with us. What were you thinking?
You must have done so many podcasts for this book.
Like, why would you do this
with us? And Oh, yeah, because I like being weird and because I just think we need to get more real. And you guys are at least real, and I'm really sick of stuffy people. I don't know.
So we're real and in a bit of a loose cannon, I think, at times. But no, we do legit love Jesus. We love the content yeah. that you're putting out. And to your point, yeah, we love being real. And I think... I think that we met on Twitter, and we all have a background in evangelicalism, and I'm gonna just keep it focused on your content and your book, The Great Sex Rescue, because I'm certain, I can't speak for them, but I'm certain for me and my wife, there has been a background of false teachings, right? That as
oh, yeah.
two young Christians when we got married some almost 20 years ago, it was super awkward yep. that, yep, and we had to learn the hard way. And so I'm thankful for yeah. your book and your content. But yeah, so tell us,
a little bit about you. You're Canadian, aren't you? I only realized I started following you today on Instagram, and I was like, oh, I didn't realize you were in Canada. Like,
yeah,
so slightly out of yeah, so American. I didn't pick that up at all until today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and so I've been writing about marriage and sex for like, I don't know, 13, 14 years now. And I feel like I towed the party line for a long time because I figured that I was the one who was wrong. Because if everyone is teaching X and I don't experience X, I figure I must be the one that's wrong. And yeah. then in the last few years, I'm just like, no, I'm getting too old for this. Like, I want to be able to say what I think now. And so I just started laying it down a little bit more. And I found that that's where people are at, which is exactly what you guys have found too, right? Yeah. Like people, like a lot of what we've been taught about sex, yes, but about everything is really wrong. And I feel like sex is a way that, like, this is going to sound weird, but my audience is very, I have a wide spectrum of doctrines, of religious traditions, because I'm talking about sex. Because like everybody wants to have an orgasm. It doesn't matter whether you're independent fundamentalist Baptist yeah. or whether you're Episcopalian, right? You want to have, and so I get these people of all different doctrines. So I feel like sex is the way in to help people start deconstructing. So,
that's what I'm thinking about, actually, because I was writing some notes because I've been like, in the gym reading, first I read Beth's because we've done the interview, and then I read Christine's book, you know, of Jesus John Waite, and then I read yours, Jesus all on the treadmill, like pacing, because all of them are quite hard to read as women. I feel like you guys yeah. are like the Holy Trinity, like totally like God ordained yeah. time, moment in time that all three of you women are trying to dismantle this sort of patriarchal, nationalistic, you know, like kind of Christian, evangelical Christianity. But I felt with yours, like I'd read with Beth's a lot of stuff anyway, because I'm, you know, quite a Christian feminist anyway. With Christine's, it was a bit like a bit of a disconnect because I'm British, but, you know, it was interesting and also yeah. frustrating. With yours, I literally, one time I was on the mat on the gym floor and I nearly burst into tears. Mm. And, you know, because I was like, you know, we can talk about the home, we can talk about women need to do X, Y, and Z, but when you start talking about sex, that is the most intimate part of you. You know, it is the most intimate. You give yourself to someone gives themselves to you, you know, and sort of, I guess, that connection you're talking about, like it's connected to everyone, like all kind of denominations, because it's so intimate. And I guess we talk about being intimate with Jesus. I'm not trying to connect the two, but I'm just saying maybe that's how we connect, because it's like not everyone's evangelical, say, but everyone is, you know, either having sex or thinking about sex or living in a culture that talks about sex. So I think with your one, that really hit a nerve with me, and just for personally, but also just obviously a lot of things haven't happened to me, and just weeping for women, basically, because a lot of it is about that, isn't it? Like in your book, it is about how women have predominantly suffered in this area. So I'm always rubbish at giving questions, so I don't know if you want to just springboard off that statement. Like I just wrap it on and then just hope someone will take the lead.
Well,
I'll ask
you a question. I feel like I'm seeing God use women in our at least Western American evangelical culture right now in a huge way. And I'm here for it, first of all, like absolutely here for it. But just watching the response and the reception, mm-hmm. I'm just curious your thoughts there.
It's been a wild ride this last year because it's so interesting because I had never heard of Beth Barr or Kristen DeMay or anything before we started writing this. And then I started noticing Kristen's tweets, and Kristen actually wrote an endorsement for us. So that's how I met her, is I just reached out on Twitter out of nowhere and she was good enough to do that. And we've become quite close friends, and I talked to Beth a lot too. Like, we just talk all the time on Twitter, all of us, and none of us knew that the other was working on all of this at the same time. But it seems like in the last year, publishers have just published so many works, and it's not just women. There's also Esau McCauley, there's Jamar Tisby, like there's there's other people of color especially who have been writing some books that really challenge a lot of the traditional American evangelicalism. And what I think is so funny about our book, I co-authored it with two others because, quite frankly, we needed three of us. We did this huge study, 20,000 women. So my daughter, Rebecca, is one of my co-authors. She ran the survey. She wrote the survey. She's got a psychometrics background. Joanna Sawatsky is our epidemiologist and statistician, and she ran all the stats and did all the chi-square stuff and all the stuff I don't even understand. But she got all our research ready. And then I did the predominantly the writing, and then Rebecca edited it. And I think I had two of the funny lines, and all the other funny lines were hers because she's way snarkier than I am. So, but like when we wrote it, Rebecca finished the survey 2 days postpartum. Joanna had just gotten over a life-threatening miscarriage, and then she was running the stats while she was pregnant, and she ran the last stats when she was 2 weeks postpartum, right before she moved to the Arctic. Literally, she lives in the Arctic now. And and I went through menopause, so we're like three horrendously hormonal women writing this book about sex. And it's just like, take that, you
guys. I love the transparency and the realness, because like it's just because this is how God's made humanity and humans, and like patriarchy has hijacked that whole like idea of hormonal women and turned it into a, I don't know if pejorative is
they're
the right
a burden
term,
they're a burden or
yeah as if it's a burden it's not done.
But can I talk women's bodies for a minute?
Yes.
Okay.
Does Finch need? He's a little young. Does he?
He's fine.
Yeah, go for it.
Maybe he does.
Let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, this is education time. All right.
Yes.
Women are capable of multiple orgasms. Mm-hmm. Women do not have a refractory period, which means that we can orgasm on top of each other. You don't, like, once you reach orgasm, you don't need to take a rest or anything like that, like men do. Women have a body part which is only for pleasure. Okay, so if you look at that, why is it that we assume it's women who are the least sexual? And yet we do that in the church. We assume that it's women who don't want sex. Like Emerson Egerton, Love and Respect, literally said, if your husband is typical, he has a need you don't have. And I mean, when men write that, I sometimes wonder, like, do you realize what you're saying about your own marriage? Like, I shouldn't say that publicly, but you are the first podcast I've actually said that on. Okay, I let go a little bit too much.
No, it's cool.
Yes. But shout out being real.
You go off your own experience, don't you? So if you're saying that and you're not saying it from a medical position, then you are going off your own experience of your marriage, aren't you? Like you said, that if he's got an issue with his marriage, that he might be going off his own experience. And we have to be careful not to do that. Like, if you're writing those kind of books for people.
My wife's going to kill me. Thankfully, she doesn't listen to this mess of a podcast. But if she finds out, she's going to kill me because she's such a private, sweet individual. But I, as a man, I'm not afraid to say, like, it was super awkward when we first got married. And it was only because we went through, especially her. I didn't become a Christian and then into the evangelical stuff until I was really a senior in high school when we started dating. She was in it. She did the purity culture. She did the purity ring. She was heavy in a Southern Baptist youth group. And it made it really awkward when we got married. We were both virgins. It was really awkward. But I'm going to, this is all I'm going to say in terms of openness and realness. As we begin to understand who we are created by God, as that this is not an abnormal thing, it's not taboo. But once we broke that mindset, what we had been taught before, once we got past that, it changed. It changed a lot.
Yeah.
But you talked about that in your book, didn't you, Sheila? It's like, it's not just about breaking or getting or understanding just sex. It's about the relationship, and then the decent sex comes. So because you can be vulnerable with your partner to talk about what is good, what is not, you know, that if you're not having sex, like you say in these books, these guys go, well, you just need to get on with it. Well, no, that's not the issue. That's the cure, not the prevention. That's not the right metaphor. But like, just that's not.
It's a symptom. It's a symptom. That's not the problem.
That's the metaphor I was thinking for. You know, and it's just like, I don't know. Do you talk about that a little bit? Actually, that it's not just about sex. It is about the relationship, and then the sex comes.
Yeah, and you know. The real purpose for our survey, the whole reason we did that, we did 20,000 women, is, if I can back up and tell the story, is because I read Love and Respect. Mm. And I had been writing and blogging about sex for over a decade. I wrote quite a large book on sex, 2012, did quite well, still does quite well, The Good Girl's Guide to Great Sex. I wrote 31 Days to Great Sex. I created an orgasm course. I created a libido course. Like, I was putting out all this healthy information, right? And yet everybody on my blog would still come with very similar problems. And it seemed like no matter how much good stuff I said, I couldn't really get through to people. And so one day I had a migraine. I didn't want to work. It was a Friday afternoon. And I was on Twitter, of course, and people were debating whether or not women actually need respect. And I thought to myself, you know, I've never actually read that book and I have it in my closet. So I went and I got it. And being a sex person, I didn't read the whole thing. I just turned to the sex chapter because that's all I really care about, you know. And I'm reading this thing and it's like, a husband has a need for a physical release. And so you need to minister to him sexually as unto Jesus Christ. And if he is typical, he has a need you don't have, and he will come under satanic attack if he doesn't get physical release. And why would you deprive him of something which takes such a short amount of time and makes him so happy? And if you don't give him this, he'll have an affair, and you need to understand that he struggles with lust. And that was it. Like, wow. Not a single word about how women could feel pleasure. That was it. And that is our second best-selling marriage book.
Yeah.
Okay, the first is The Five Love Languages. Yeah. That is the best-selling Christian book that even talks about sex. And it doesn't mention that women have a clitoris and that women can feel good.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. And that is a problem. And that's why I'm so thankful for your content and your passion on this in the church.
Yeah, really.
That is exactly what changed in my marriage with us. That is exactly what changed everything. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, just because it was all about the relationship between both of us, not me being a guy and assuming I'm full of lust and assuming I want to hump everything out there, like, because that is not true.
Yeah, exactly.
I know myself, and I always struggled with that indoctrination as a guy in the church. Because I was like, I always felt like, well, am I less of a man because I don't struggle with porn and want to?
Yeah. And this, okay, let me just, why is it that we don't realize that the all men struggle with lust message is misandry? Like, it's a terrible message absolutely about men.
Yeah, such like, an idea, though, isn't
it is. And, you know, that's one of the things that we did is when I started to realize how negative these messages were, we thought, okay, maybe this is the problem. And we tried to tell Focus on the Family. We sent them a report of hundreds of women who said that they were abused after reading Love and Respect, and Focus on the Family ignored us. And so then we decided to go big or go home. So we thought, well, they can ignore 500, but can they ignore 20,000? So far, yes, they can. They still haven't said anything about our book, but at least we're making them look bad. So we surveyed, you know, these 20,000 women, and we wanted to know, are there certain messages that make sex terrible for women? And then for men too, by extension. We were looking only at women because of the orgasm gap. you know, like it's women that tend to have problems with sex, enjoying sex. And so that's why we surveyed women. We have another book on men coming out next year. So we're not ignoring guys, but like, I just was really blown away by how negative so many of these books portray men. Like Every Man's Battle literally says that, we find another reason for men's sexual sin. They got there naturally simply by being male.
Wow.
I literally wrote down in my notes this morning, Every Man's Battle, to bring up, because that was such a formative book for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to a point years and years and years later that I felt like, no, I felt like I just believed it because a youth pastor told me to. Jay,
so Sheila, I have a question, because this is what I'm trying to think through. Like, thankfully, I think I dodged bullets because I've never read a lot of these books, but I did grow up SBC, and another bullet that I dodged is my wife and I, we based our marriage off of Philippians 2. So there's just this like constant reminder of like outdoing each other with honor and things like that. So like, And thankfully that's transferred to the bedroom. So there you go, Andy.
Okay, virtue signal.
You're not the only one. But here's what I'm thinking about. I just realized I called you Andy. Andrew, sorry. But what I'm thinking about is the why. Why is it people just naturally want to buy books that tell them how terrible they are? Like, how did this become like such a major marketing force to tell men, hey, you guys are scumbags, and to tell women, hey, your man just needs physical release or he's going to cheat on you. Like, I can't figure out like how that message, why does that resonate and why does it stick in evangelical culture? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah. That's something that we were going back and forth with trying to understand. And so we started to ask, what is the end game here?
Yeah.
Like, what are these authors, what are these speakers who are promoting this, what are they actually trying to get? And what we found is that all of the really negative messages that, or not all, but I think 85% of the negative messages that hurt sex for women. So the idea that all men struggle with lust, it's every man's battle. You have to have sex frequently or he's going to watch porn. You are obligated to have sex with your husband when he wants it. Like, all of these kinds of messages. They make sex way worse for women, but they make women have sex slightly more often. And so if what you're interested in is simply frequency, the messages work. And if it comes to every man's battle, if what you're interested in is feeling like my sin is not really my responsibility, the message works. Because what Every Man's Battle does, even though it says that it's trying to get men to be pure, the solution for men's purity is to transfer your lust onto your wife. It says, instead of putting your sexual energy on all of these other women, transfer your sexual energy to your wife. And so the goal of a man is, instead of objectifying all women, you're supposed to objectify just one woman for the rest of your life.
But she's just being used. She becomes,
it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
That's Amy. Gosh. Yes.
Just that's used. What it, but this
that's
is
what
it happens,
boils down to.
But that's what happens continuously in sort of these patriarchy sort of Christianity circles, is the fact that the woman is used. She's there to pick up the pieces of the children. She's there to pick up the pieces to make the house nice for the man, so the man can go and have his career or his job as a pastor or whatever, you know, and the woman is there to pick up the pieces in the bedroom because she's just there to be subservient to the male. That's what patriarchy comes down to. Like, the woman is under the authority of the man, and whatever the needs of the man is, it's hierarchy in humanity, you know, and it's just really unhealthy. So, you know, your book is so basically bringing egalitarian, and I don't mean that in a theological sense before everyone's like, oh, I'm a compotary or whatever. But like, but just, it, you know, being equal, you know, it, we're equal, male and female. Mm-hmm. Genesis 1, you go back to Genesis 1, male and female are equal. You know, I don't like to see marriage in Genesis 1, actually. I see in humanity, male and female being equal as one. And I feel like your book is trying to readdress the balance, like pulling up men, mm-hmm. because we don't want to push men down, say you're scumbags because look at all the things you've thought of that women are and you're terrible. And so now you're, no, you're actually pulling up the men, but also bringing up the women at the same time, because you've got to be like, no, you can't keep doing this to women. This is not okay. Like, and I think for me, that's what just really was the emotional thing.
Yeah,
it's just like, just the fact that this book was like passionate about, you know, honoring and loving men and women, or husbands and wives, okay, if we do, you know, because obviously it's about that, but yeah. So again, I never put questions forward, but I just, that's what I loved about it. So if you want to like say something about that, then is that, was that your motive? You know,
I love how Amy's like, Sheila, speak now.
Well,
I told you, she's our boss. I mean, she's the queen.
Good question.
What we were really looking at is how can we achieve real intimacy? And the thing is, you cannot have intimacy unless both people matter.
Yes.
And
well, that's good.
I was just thinking it's mutually assured destruction, those messages.
Mm. Can I, Shelley, can I tweet that out and pretend I came up with that quote? I'm totally kidding. But I am going to tweet that and tag you.
You can't, and that's essentially the problem. Let me tell you about the obligation sex message, because it illustrates this really well.
It's a brilliant name.
So the obligation sex message is really the most harmful message that we found. And it's the idea that a wife is obligated to give her husband sex when he wants it. And we see this, what we did for our book was we didn't only survey 20,000 people. We also then looked at the top evangelical marriage books and sex books. So the top 10 marriage books, 6 iconic sex books, and we rated them on a 12-point scale of healthy sexuality. And obligation sex was the one they all, as a group, scored the worst on. Very, very few books talked about any reason why a wife could say no. They said instead, you're not allowed to deprive him except for prayer and fasting. Kevin Lehman in Sheet Music says, hey, if you're postpartum, give him a hand job.
Oh, so gross.
And if you're having really heavy periods, give him oral sex or a hand job, so that because your period is a really difficult time for him.
Yeah, nothing to do with her, eh?
Right.
It's using.
I know, but that's what he said, you know, postpartum and intended for pleasure as well, which was an iconic sex book, said that when you're pregnant and postpartum, during the times we have to abstain, make sure that sex is as regular as it was before by pleasing him in other ways. So she comes home from the hospital. She's bleeding heavily. She's not sleeping. Her milk is coming in, and her main concern is supposed to be that he ejaculates. Mm,
yeah. It's such a low view of humanity, okay. Isn't it? Again,
so, right. So we have this obligation sex message, which is throughout our books, definitely in love and respect, you know, that you're just not allowed to deprive him. So we took a look at what happens when women believe this. And here's just one stat, which I find so important. First of all, okay, quiz. Do you all know what vaginismus is? Have you ever heard the word vaginismus?
In your book, it's not the dryness, though, is it? Is it the dryness? I got confused with two words. Okay. No, that was the one I got confused with.
Vaginismus.
Oh, the thing where it... yeah, sorry. I was like, I can't think which one it was. Yeah.
Is this just an audio podcast? Amy is making...
That's really helpful.
Amy is making... We're all making hand signs here. Okay, so...
I was going to grab a picture. Thanks, Jay.
So that
everybody will know.
we can ask
our friend Curtis, our blind pastor friend, if that is.
Explain it, because that's not very helpful, me doing that hand gesture.
Okay. Before I explain it, erectile dysfunction. Everybody know what erectile dysfunction is?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we got. All right. So we have.
Is that the sign?
Vaginismus.
Oh,
I bet you are, Amy.
Okay. So Amy has taken off her cardigan.
perfect at the time. Right. Incredible. Sorry, Sheila. So, yes.
No, okay.
We all know what erectile dysfunction is, but of couples under 45, vaginismus is far more common. It affects roughly 22% of women. And what happens is the muscles in the vaginal wall contract and can't relax. And it's involuntary. She's not doing it deliberately, but it makes penetration really painful, if not impossible. So she really tenses up. And if any of our listeners are having that, please see a pelvic floor physiotherapist. There are treatments you can do. You don't need to live with pain, okay? But just as an aside, there you go. Now, we have known for years, like 55 years ago, there are journal articles in journals of gynecology that say that vaginismus is far more common in religious conservative communities. And any pelvic floor physiotherapist will tell you that most of her patients are women. And it's conservative Christian women, okay?
Yeah.
And so this is our problem, and yet none of the books mention it. Sheet Music does, very briefly, and Gift of Sex handled it quite well. But, like, our books don't even mention vaginismus on the whole. Even though, as I said, 22% of women, 7% to the point that penetration's impossible. Now, what we wanted to know, and this is one of the reasons we surveyed so many women, is what is it about evangelical Christianity that causes vaginismus? Because we know it's higher, but why? And we found it is the obligation sex message. That is the big trigger. Wow. Telling a woman you are obligated to give your husband sex when he wants it has virtually the same statistical effect on vaginismus as prior abuse does.
Wow. Is anybody else talking about this?
Wow. No, but think about this. I want to really bring this home. Okay, so... Yeah. If she is abused, it makes sense that she would have vaginismus.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But abuse and the obligation sex message say the same thing. They say you don't matter. Your needs don't matter. He has the right to use you however he wants. And women interpret that message as trauma. Mm-hmm. We hold it in our bodies and interpret it as trauma.
Wow.
Yeah. And yet this is the message that evangelical resources are spreading.
That is, oh my gosh, Sheila, that is the message that our evangelical women need to hear. Because I'm just going to say it. I think this obligation message is equal to abuse, if not just call it abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's coercion. And coercion is the other thing.
You're not allowed to say no, are you? When your woman's not allowed to say no to sex, what is that? What do we call that? You know, it's just like...
Mm-hmm.
You know,
do you know the one word? The one word that is not mentioned in our books, it's not in any of them. Consent. Consent.
Because the assumption is when you're married, you've given yourself to your husband, you know, that therefore you've they have consent over you, isn't it? That's the message, I think, in some things. So I was thinking, it reminded me of watching this video about sex by someone young. I can't remember his name. Surname's Young, blonde, quite muscly. Like, and I can't remember any of it, but it was basically like, if you're having issues or if you like, have sex for 7 days. And I remember we did this and we got to 6 days and you're like, you'd be bothered. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the point in making people have sex for 7 days if you've got issues? I think the thing is, don't learn that the woman is not to be used. And if you've got sex issues, it's probably an emotional issue going on for the woman if she's saying no. Like, for me, that's so making someone have sex for 7 days is probably not going to solve your issues, you know? Like, and that's your preach on your Sunday morning to say that.
I was going to ask a question. So Sheila, I guess my question would be, let's break it down, like, first to the men, then to the women. But so obviously this message has been internalized into evangelical culture and probably outside of evangelical culture, just in church culture in general. So what do you then say to the men that are listening, that are like thinking, oh my God, I have internalized this message and I want to get my marriage on track to not be coercive, but to actually make it mutually fulfilling? What would you say to the men? And then to the women after that, who have maybe heard this message, believed it themselves, and now that they need to start this conversation, to pull back from, I forgot what you called it, but to basically from being used and just start that ball rolling. Does mm-hmm. that question make sense?
Yeah. You know what? I think, and this is something we talk about a lot in chapter four, is I think a lot of people just need to go back to the beginning again. Like, just go back to the beginning, because so many of us have done things so wrong. And one of the reasons for the big orgasm gap, the 47 point orgasm gap, like, seriously, okay, all you people who are listening, if you remember nothing else, remember the number 47, okay? So 47. 95%, most studies find 95% of men almost always or always reach orgasm in a sexual encounter. For evangelical women, the number's 48. So that's 47 points. Okay. So less than half of women. So that's a huge orgasm gap. And one of the biggest reasons for that orgasm gap is the fact that she isn't getting aroused. Arousal is the missing piece. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's mental. So it's some of the things she believes about sex. So having those talks, setting her free from that is important. A lot of it's relational, exactly what Amy was talking about, how you're not going to have great sex if you don't like each other, if you feel like you're not connecting, okay? But then it's also like how we actually do sex. And women were not made to climax in 8 minutes through intercourse, right? Like, women need a whole lot more. And the problem is we tend to use men's experience of sex as the standard. So he orgasms through intercourse. So what is wrong with her? She needs to catch up to him, as opposed to realizing God did not put the clitoris up the vagina. Okay. You can tweet that one out too if you want.
That's a tweet.
Are we still a family podcast right now? I don't know.
It's on the outside, which means it's not going to get maximum stimulation from intercourse, which means that sometimes, you know, the way her body is designed is that he needs to learn how to pleasure her, and she needs to learn how to accept that, because a lot of women are just rushing him along saying, no, it's okay, don't worry about me, because they feel selfish and they feel like I'm taking too long. Only reason women think we take too long is because men are fast. Like, if men took 45 minutes, women would look like rockets. So it's not that women are slow, it's just comparatively, okay?
You know?
I was very nervous coming into this podcast because sex is supposed to be taboo. I hope Dr. Barr doesn't hear me because I told her the same, but this is true. This is one of my favorite conversations we've had on here. It's just extremely enlightening, and I think honoring to both men and women in the way God has made us. I love it. So I do have I have some questions. We like to do rapid fire questions. All right. So the goal here. So they're probably not going to be what you think. So you seem to me, before we even got here, on the Twitters, that you are a fun person. So you just
just go for it.
All right. All you have to do is just quickly answer. We're going to go through them. You ready?
Or you can pass. Okay. You can pass ready. As well.
Oh, really?
Lay it on me.
New rules?
I let Kristen pass my homoeroticism one.
Thanks, Amy. We'll edit that. You ready? Here we go. Should I smoke after sex? Yes or no?
I didn't hear you. I honestly didn't hear it. What's that?
Should I smoke after sex? Yes or no?
Well, no, because that means you did it too fast.
Yes. I'm thinking about. Let's see. I was thinking about changing my king size bed in our bedroom to two twin size beds. Is that a good idea or not?
No.
So you're not an you're not an advocate of like the Flintstone 50s.
I Love Lucy, the I Love Lucy thing where they did that.
just curious. Actually, Finch, I need you to kind of get closer for me on the camera, please. What do you think about Finch Face's mustache? She laughed. That's good enough. Do you know or follow or like Hunter Crowder on Twitter?
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
No, that was too quick as well. So it wasn't like an awkward.
Way too quick.
I was going to say yes.
Great. I'm going to have to dial his ego down a little bit in the DM now. All right. If a, this is, I've been dying to ask this one for somebody. If a raccoon and a possum, I'm from the South in America. So if a raccoon and a possum both jump inside my trash can at the same time, and I'll picture it. Who gets the leftover chicken I had the night before?
I didn't hear that one either. What, I didn't hear the last bit. Who, what?
Who gets, so you got the first part, right? That a possum, raccoon.
Yeah, and a raccoon trash can.
I'll go into the trash can. Who gets the chicken left over for my dinner the night before? Who gets that first?
Euphemism, Sheila.
Only the
rip. About the second time when you used the hand movements.
Only the
All I know is that I once rescued a raccoon from a trash can.
Really?
The most Canadian story I've ever heard in my life.
No rabies, no biting. How did you rescue it?
Well, we could hear it. My daughters and I were biking when we were camping, and you could hear this raccoon the trash can was moving, and you could hear it scratching. And so I dumped it over, and the raccoon ran out, and then there was another raccoon in the woods, and they hugged.
Oh my gosh! What incredible! So here is Sheila rescuing relationships in the church between male and female and raccoons in the wild. You are an incredible person. So this is Mark Gunger doesn't know what he's missing, Sheila. I picked it up off your bio. I have no clue who this guy is. I've seen the
back and forth. I laughed so hard.
I noticed your bio this morning. I went to look at it again, and I saw that. I was like, that's incredible. Oh, man. Well, listen, so author, blogger, we didn't even talk about your blog. You have a blog, mm-hmm. right? You want to plug that real quick?
I do. Yeah, it's lovehonorandvacuum.com. We talk about sex pretty much every day, marriage, pretty fun. And we have our Bear Marriage podcast every Thursday. Awesome. But if you go to the blog, you can find the book. You can find our orgasm course, our libido course, basically everything. We have a great puberty course if you want to talk to your kids about sex. That one's done by my two daughters and my sons-in-law. So it's like a big sister talking to your daughters and a big brother talking to your sons. So it's
okay, I'm going to check that out. My wife has done the conversation with my daughter. And my fifth grade son right now is on deck, so that's on me, and I'll check that out. I'll check that resource out. So, but yeah, author, blogger, speaker. Let's see. I think Amazon, if you look at it, it's like 4.8, almost 5-star review in your book. I also checked out Barnes & Noble. Who cares about brick and mortar anymore? But it was a 5. It was a 5-star. So, congratulations there, and thank you. I mean, thank you for coming and spending some time with us this Saturday morning and on this podcast. So anything, final words?
Yeah, it's been great.
WCT community, you want to say?
I just know that when I was getting attacked by Mark Gunger and I hashtag WCT, you guys came to my rescue like anything. So
oh, yeah.
I appreciate all of you.
I didn't see that.
And that's awesome.
Whenever I need the cavalry to come, you just do hashtag WCT and then the best stuff starts flying. It's awesome.
The gatekeepers hate it. The gatekeepers hate it.
Yeah, they hate us.
That's awesome. Well, very cool. So thank you, Sheila. I know that you've got a lot going on in your life. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, Earth is ghetto. I want to leave.